and you're listening to the Going Home Show. It's not the midnight hour. It is 5:30, and you're listening to 102.3 and 1240 AM, the Going Home Show. I'm Sam Corsi, sitting in for Mark Cope. Joining us on the telephone right now is Eileen Rockefeller. She is the great-granddaughter of the world's first billionaire, John D. Rockefeller, and she has written a book called entitled Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself. She'll talk to us about what it was like growing up as a Rockefeller. And welcome to the program, Eileen.
Hello, Sam. It's nice to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the program today. I have your book here. There's lots of interesting things in it. One of the first questions that I have for you is, the Rockefellers have always been more or less kind of a quiet, private family, and intensely private.
Yes.
And in fact, but you are the first Rockefeller woman to write about your personal family memoirs. What made you do that?
Well, I actually began this book when my two sons left home for college, and I was initially writing a story about 5 months that they and my husband and I spent together on our farm living. We created an experiment in simple living. We wanted them to appreciate the enormous opportunities they had, and one way we thought we could help them appreciate this was to live as if in the 1840s, which was when our house was built. And we did projects in food, shelter, clothing, and community, mm-hmm. the four basics of life. And I started writing about all those stories because it was so wonderful. But then I realized they would be too close to that age for me to publish. So I went back further to my own childhood, and I decided that it was worth writing these stories because the deeper I went, the more universal these stories became. And so from the experience of meditating on various life occurrences, I discovered that it really isn't. The most important thing is not about self, is not about net worth, it's about self-worth. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to share that with the world. Even though we all need a roof over our head and we appreciate comforts, and goodness knows I've had more than my share, I really wanted to express to people at a time of tremendous materialism that money really doesn't just in and of itself buy you happiness, and having a TV in every room doesn't buy you happiness. But knowing who you are and having a connection to family and friends is what really brings meaning to life.
Well, I think you bring that out very well in your book. If there's anything that I learned from it, it is your passion about family.
Yes. Yes, that's absolutely true. And I would say it's only become deeper the more I went into the book and into the writing of it. And I'm very blessed that my five older brothers and sisters were supportive of me. And, of course, I gave them the respect of showing them the chapters that had anything to do with them prior to publishing for them to have a say in it.
Right.
And they all approved it before it went to press.
And that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. I didn't want them at my back in the wrong way.
Well, I guess you get asked this all the time, and I'm gonna ask it. What was it like growing up a Rockefeller? When did you realize that things were different for you and your family than there were for other people out there?
Right. Well, I do get asked that question since writing the book. And I think the answer is when I went to school, I mean, I would say by fourth grade, we were all old enough at age 9 where children somehow knew that that name was a famous name, or certainly the teachers did.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it came for roll call, oh my goodness, it was a moment I always dreaded, because as a child, to be seen with the assumptions that come with a famous name, it makes it really hard for you to feel like you're being seen for yourself.
Right.
And when you're young, you don't really know who you are anyway. So having roll call was a very difficult time, and yet it also prepared me for the kind of resilience that we all need in life when people are unkind or they ask inappropriate questions. It was not all bad, because it helped me to be quick on my feet.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Yeah. I mean, people would ask, which Rockefeller are you? Or are you one of the Rockefellers? And,
right.
And if they asked, which one are you? I would say, well, I'm Eileen. But what they really wanted to know was my uncle Nelson my uncle, or was my father David? And that's the truth.
Right, right. Well, what I gather from the book too, and that you bring out that your parents went to great lengths to raise you and your siblings as normal as possible.
Yes, whatever normal really means.
well, I was going to kind of put that in air quotes of what.
Right. Right. Well, you know, yeah, so normal to them meant knowing how to do things with our hands, appreciating natural beauty, being understated in our clothing, being kind to people, whether they were a butler or a king or a taxi driver, didn't matter, a fisherman, you treat everybody the same. My father always has extended his hand to everybody. And so part of the way they did that, and I write about this, you may have read, was having us, the youngest three, help them to build a prefabricated cabin on an island in Maine. And those really were some of my happiest childhood memories, because we were doing what we called normal living. Working with our hands felt like normal living. And,
right.
And in the course of that, they taught us to appreciate the joys of simplicity and beauty in nature.
Right. Was it hard to make friends as you were growing up? Was it hard for you to know how to trust people or to trust into them?
You might think that would be true, and I think it was for at least one of my siblings, was maybe harder than for others. I developed very acute antennae, partly being trained by my mother's moods. That actually turned out to be a gift for me, and then my personality is more extroverted. But I had to really tune in to what her moods were like, because she suffered from depression. And when she was depressed, she could be very, she could be cruel. She would get very angry, and in a flash, you would feel like she had pulled the rug out from under you, that she no longer loved you or me. So I learned to read people at a very early age, and when I walked through the door, I could tell if there was a room of people who, and I still can, you know, who's angry, who's sad, who's struggling to be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I also could tell who's really interested in me and who's interested in being seen with me, or who It's just being fake about it.
Right.
So as a result, I can smell those people out, and I have great, great friends, and many of them.
Good. Well.
Yeah.
You write in your book, a wealth sometimes requires that one keep others out. And in speaking of your mom, you talk about how she changed the locks on the door to keep.
Oh, you really have read the book.
Her own mom.
Absolutely, on her own
grandmother.
Well, but her own mother invaded the boundary in order to come in the house and make, in those days, long-distance calls were expensive, and her mother would come into the house and act as if she was the grand dame and order the help around, the butler, the cook, the maid, and then go to my mother's phone and make all these phone calls. And this must have been extremely stressful and annoying to my mother. And luckily, she found solace and help in psychotherapy. She saw a therapist for years, and I think that's what began it, because she had to find help in order to figure out how to say no to her mother.
Right.
Her mother was a bully.
Yeah.
And I've learned a lot about bullies as a result of that, and it's one reason I've become so interested in social and emotional learning. You probably read that Daniel Goleman and I and several others co-founded an organization called the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning.
Yes.
Its acronym is CASEL.
Yes.
And it's promoting social and emotional skills in schools across America. Sadly, you're in your state with Fort Hood being, I don't know how close is Fort Hood to you.
It's about 100 miles away from
Well, my heart goes out to those people and to all people who've suffered violence. And I certainly don't have all the answers, but I do think that if more children were taught how to self-regulate as well as express themselves and really learn how to listen and be listened to. That's the biggest thing. If more families had dinner together around the dining room table, even once a week, but, you know, the more the better. That's what makes the difference in raising children with really well-balanced life skills.
Well, I think you've more or less answered my next question, which you mentioned your uncle Nelson Rockefeller, a former governor of the state of New York and former vice president, and I guess Jay is a cousin.
Jay is a first cousin.
Okay.
Yep.
Jay is a former governor of.
No, Jay is a senator. Well, he's never been a former governor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm
You're
mistaken.
Probably confusing him with Winthrop. There have been a few of them.
Oh, okay.
Winthrop
okay.
was the late Winthrop Rockefeller was my uncle and was governor of Arkansas.
Okay.
And then Jay is
a senator now.
A senator from West Virginia and has been for many years. He's about to retire at the end of this year or next year. I can't remember.
And in fact, he got to West Virginia through the VISTA program, which is another American
Peace Corps. Exactly.
Right.
It's a national-based Peace Corps. Mm-hmm.
Another indication of your family giving of themselves for those that are less fortunate than you.
Well, I'm glad you raised that point, because not only were we taught to at least give one-third, save one-third, and spend one-third of our wealth. But we also had it role-modeled that giving money isn't enough. It's actually giving your own time.
Mm-hmm.
And so service is as big a value in our family as a form of philanthropy as the act of giving money itself.
In 1981... you were the founder of the Institute of the Advancement of health, and you were a pioneer in bringing credibility to the field of mind-body health, which at that time nobody really talked about.
Yes, that's true. It's true. It was a fascinating experience in my life, which was prompted by my mentor, Norman Cousins, who wrote Anatomy of an Illness. And in that book, he talked about his own belief that laughter and vitamin C is what brought him round to health. And while it may not have been the only thing,
right,
he actually was on to something.
Because, I do believe, yes.
Well, yes, because since that time, it's been proven how positive emotions, and especially laughter, and that's why there's laughter yoga today. My son actually teaches laughter yoga. But laughter itself actually releases endorphins, which are the same things that are chemicals that are released from physical exercise. And as we all know, once you get your blood circulating, you're oxygenated, you feel better. And so he healed himself, but I couldn't build an organization around one man when, in fact, he was being ridiculed by the medical professions. So what I did was to find the other people in the field, or many others, not all, who were pioneering one aspect or another. So the founder of psychopharmacology, the founder of psychoneuroimmunology, the founder of biofeedback, etc., had never met each other, and the gift of being in my family is that we have convening power that I can call and get through and invite people, and I may not have really been deserving of respect for myself, but ultimately the desire to do good and the name that opens the door gives me a leg up. So that I was able to convene 16 people who were all leaders in one aspect or another of mind-body health.
Mm-hmm.
And together, they helped to pioneer the field. And one of them, I think, was originally from Texas, actually, and that is Dean Ornish, who now lives in California, in Northern California. But he's become famous for his work with diet, exercise, and social support. And there was another man who started the first health maintenance organization in Stanford, who discovered quite by accident that as much as he was expecting that for people with severe arthritis, who didn't even want to go out of the house, he had some of them in a study where they were just doing exercise, and then others he had joining a social support group, and he discovered that in the end it mattered less whether they did their exercises than whether they joined the social support group. The people, even if they didn't do any exercises but they went to the group, they're the ones who got better.
Wow.
So what we're learning is we need community. We are a social species, and we heal best when we're in community.
Well, and you speak often of the healing power of nature. You and your family are all conservationists, and you speak often about that. What do you say about people today, or what do you say to them that kind of, I don't know, kind of brush that off, or kind of think that's kind of not the norm?
Not the norm. Well, first I might ask them if they've ever spent time in nature and what things they might have done, and I might ask them what does bring them peace. But if I really knew this person, I'd just like to take them for a walk. That's all it takes, really, and to stop and listen to the first robins returning in spring, or the very first, they're just coming up right now, the snowdrops are in, coming up in my garden. I live in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just beginning to get the signs of spring. You all there have, I'm sure, been enjoying lovely weather.
It's been up and down.
It's been up and down. Well,
you know
a little.
It'll be 30 degrees.
Oh, but I'm looking out my window right now to this most beautiful patch of snowdrops. It's like a miracle. Literally within a day of when the snow melts,
mm-hmm.
part of the earth is just popping with these white blossoms on green.
Would you say that there is a relationship, a kinship, with conservationists and environmentalists?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that probably anyone who's an environmentalist or a conservationist, I think of them almost one and the same.
I kind of do, too.
I do. I think they're kind of one and the same. And, you know, one of the reasons I think it's so important for children to have experience with animals early, when they're young, it doesn't matter what animal, is that they, and there have been studies on this, actually, when a child has an interaction with an animal and they discover that, let's say it's a puppy, and that something that they could do to the puppy might hurt the puppy, or something mm-hmm. else they could do might get the puppy excited or might make it want to come and just cuddle in their lap. They're learning about other and self, and from that they learn what is compassion, what is empathy. And children who don't have any experience with animals lose the capacity to find empathy in some cases, which is why there's a very successful program in jails now called Puppies Behind Bars.
Yes, yes, yeah. I've heard of that.
My father actually has one of the dogs that was trained by somebody.
I see.
Who was in jail, who still is in jail.
I do want to bring up also, too, that the year 2000, you and your husband, Paul, founded the Champlain Valley Greenbelt Alliance, a local nonprofit organization, to protect greenbelts along major corridors in Vermont.
Yes, well, maybe that's a much smaller scale of what Lady Bird Johnson did in Texas and in other places, a form of beautification. But, in fact, we were wanting to preserve this historic road and its view sheds, which were comparable in beauty to any national park, but which people take for granted because it's just a road corridor, and it could so easily have all become developed from within the whole 40-mile stretch.
Right.
And, I mean, I think this is a problem of short-sightedness on the part of many throughout this country, that instead of creating bookends at the edges of towns, we allow development to sprawl. And I'm not against development, but I think it's really important that we plan how we're going to develop. We need to plan for that as much as we plan how we're going to develop our own lives. So that's what we did along this road corridor, and we protected view sheds.
I see. A nice comment about Lady Bird Johnson also. She, I think, was one of the first people to bring to mind the beauty of the landscape that we have along our roadsides.
Yes, yes. I mean, she really made a big difference.
I also wanted to bring out the fact that you and your family are a major fundraising major funding priorities is reducing the threat of nuclear war.
Well, that keeps being on Wikipedia, and somebody's got to change it. We certainly care about it, but it's not our major interest. My husband's and my major interest is in reducing CO2 in the atmosphere, in stemming for the cause of stemming climate change. And we see that 40% of all CO2 in the atmosphere worldwide comes from coal. So we have spent the last 7 years devoting our energies to stopping new coal-fired power plants that are being built in this country. And when we first began this project, there were no other funders, and we helped start the campaign for the Sierra Club called the Beyond Coal Campaign. And this has brought other people into energy, other sources of energy.
Well, I think you found out my secret. I did take a peek at Wikipedia.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I just don't know how to change it. Maybe there are listeners out there who know, and they can go on my website, EileenRockefeller.com, and they can contact me. I also have a blog on my website, which I really enjoy. I write one for every Tuesday morning.
I have read a couple of those.
Oh, good.
And have
did you read the one this past Tuesday?
No, I didn't.
Too bad.
I missed that.
Well, I think you should if you want to chuckle.
I will go back. I will be back.
Oh, good.
I am holding the copy of Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself by Eileen Rockefeller. It's a nice read. There are some amazing pictures. You can tell the love of your family toward one another in the pictures, just in the pictures alone.
Well, that's nice to hear.
I really enjoyed it, that very much. Again, Being a Rockefeller, Becoming Myself. We've been speaking with Eileen Rockefeller. Where can you spoke of the blog a moment ago? Where can people find out more about you and where they can get a book?
Well, if they go to my website, you can go to EileenRockefeller.com, or if you just look up Eileen Rockefeller, you'll find my website. And I'm on Facebook as well, and when you're on my website, well, of course, you can go directly to Amazon to get my book, or I hope there's a local bookstore that you patronize and that you could ask them for it.
Well put.
Anybody wished to have me inscribe a copy to them, they should just write me, because my local bookstore here will get me to inscribe, and then they'll send it free of charge.
Very well.
And so that would be a nice way, and I've had some wonderful correspondences with people who've bought the book either through my website or their local store, and who read my blog and comment, and we have a great time.
It sounds like it. Eileen, it has been a very real pleasure to speak with you this afternoon, and
thank you, Sam.
I thank you very much for being on our program.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.